Hey there, and good morning. Sorry, I'm running a minute late. I forgot to get my cup of coffee this morning, and I'm not the type of person that gets headaches when I don't drink coffee, but I do like a warm, small cup of coffee in the morning. So I wanted to get started on a good note with all of you. Thank you for joining me today for today's live cast. It is an e-newsletter live cast, so we might have some people here who haven't joined the live cast in the past. If so, welcome. Thank you for joining in, whether you're here live or watching in the future. I am here every Wednesday from starting at 10 o'clock a.m. Central Time for about an hour to talk about Stillmire Games news. Not that we have a lot of news today, but in general, we'll talk about Stillmire Games news, what I'm up to lately and personally and professionally, and to answer your questions. If you have any non-spoiler questions, I am happy to answer them. I do have today's newsletter up on the other screen. Let's see if I can properly share. There we go. Here is the newsletter. Today, we really the focus is just on Wormspan. Wormspan, the launch was about a month ago. We have now shipped all launch copies of the game. If you've ordered very recently, maybe you haven't gotten your copy yet. And so we're just focusing on that, focusing on some things like when you're ready to play Wormspan, you can learn from the rule book, you can learn from playthroughs, from videos, rule videos like the Meeple University rule video, or from the Dice International interactive tutorial, not international tutorial. And then some things that you can take into account after you play. You can record your score on the Stillmire Scores app. You can rate it on BoardGameGeek if you haven't. You can record your score on the leaderboard where I can share every month, I share the best score at each player count that's reported to us. So yeah, I'll jump back to the newsletter in a minute, but that's some of the main thing that I talked about in today's newsletter. Other things going on at Stillmire Games. Actually, I'll do some personal stuff first. This past weekend, I had a very busy weekend, an unexpectedly busy weekend with a few dinners out, some great dinners out, including at a local restaurant called Indo and a place called Bailey's Range, and dinner at the Alamo Draft House while watching Dune Part Two, which I really enjoyed. It's a beautiful movie to watch on the big screen, and I thought it's an incredibly well-crafted film. I don't even have that many words for it because it was just stunning to watch and experience in person in the theater. And we were in the big theater with a ton of people. It's neat to be, I'm still sometimes a little bit nervous about COVID, but I'm fully vaccinated, so I'm not as concerned as I once was. Unfortunately, it's le much less widespread than it once was. It's still something to keep an eye out for, but yeah, it's fun to be there watching something with a lot of people who are excited to see the same thing that I'm watching. So, did any of you get to watch Dune recently, or have you seen any other movies recently that you really enjoyed? Simon says, when will the Tapestry revised Civ pack be back in stock? Yeah, we are working on the reprint now. Reprints usually take around 4 to 5 months to get back in stock. And so it should be back in stock in the middle of the summer is what we're looking at right now, but we are working on the reprint right now, mid to late summer, I think. Susanna is chiming in from Gamma. So my coworkers Susanna, Dave, and Alex are all at the Gamma trade show. Gamma is what is the acronym? Game Associ Game. What does Gamma stand for? Manu Game something and Manufacturers Association. Gamma. Let's see what Gamma actually stands for. Not the General Aviation Manufacturers Association. Game, oh, it's just Game Manufacturers Association. They skipped over, they used the G and the A from Game. Anyway, it's a kind of a trade show. It's for publishers to meet with distributors, to meet with sometimes the media, but mostly retailers, distributors meeting with publishers. So Susanna, Dave, and Alex are there right now. Julio says, I haven't played Wormspan. I played Wormspan recently with people who hadn't played Wingspan and they really liked it. They even said they wanted to play Wingspan to see the differences. Was this something you expected? It was certainly something that we hoped. We hoped for that. We in expanding the world of Wingspan with these with a different game like Wormspan, a different game, but with some similarities. Yeah, we were definitely hoping to pique people's curiosities. If they played Wormspan first, they might be interested in Wingspan. If they played Wingspan first, they might be interested in Wormspan. We wanted to make the game different enough that Wormspan and Wingspan could belong next to each other on the shelf, not one replacing the other. That was our goal. I know people have different preferences for that, but that was definitely our goal. Merlin's Banner says that they're going to do a solo how to play for Wormspan. I really appreciate you doing that. and they've been enjoying playing Wormspan solo and multiplayer. I'm happy to hear that. Yeah, we put a lot of effort into both of those versions of the game so that people could experience it solo or multiplayer. Nathan says, I saw roguelikes on the list. Yeah, today's title, I mentioned roguelikes because I've been thinking a lot and playing some digital roguelikes recently. It's a topic that came up last week. A roguelike is, or a digital roguelike, is a game where it's typically a single-player game where you are trying to go through a run of the game and get as far as possible, often to like a final encounter, final boss. And along the way, you have little mini encounters. And the results of those encounters is either that you lose, you die, and then you have to start over from the beginning, or you succeed and you get a special reward that helps you for the rest of the run. Nathan says he found a fun one called Tamarack Trail, which is kind of like Slay the Spire mixed with Dice Forge. I'll have to make a note about that. Yeah, just yesterday, I actually filmed a video about my top 10 favorite digital roguelikes that I would recommend to tabletop gamers. This is coming from the perspective of someone who plays significantly more tabletop games than digital games. So hopefully that'll be somewhat well informed for my fellow tabletop gamers. But I'll check out Tamarack Trail. My video this past weekend was my top 10 favorite games of all time, just period. Top 10 favorite games. I do this video or this list twice a year, every 6 months, and it was fun to put it together this year, or a couple weeks ago when I put it together. And I found myself really trying to focus on, or not really trying to focus on, but I ended up focusing on games that I find myself actively wanting to get to the table more often, which is a different framework than I've approached this list in the past, because you'll look at the list and you'll see some of my favorite games of all time are not actually on the list because as much as I love them, I'm not actively, or even for the last 6 or 8 months, I haven't been actively trying to get to them to the table, which is a sign to me that I love them, but maybe my taste right now, my favorite games right now, are should at least have that framework of games that I actively am trying to play right now too. Games that I haven't, not that I haven't gotten bored of, but yeah, it's just, I'm trying to get them to the table for whatever reason. So yeah, different way of approaching that list, and a lot of different games ended up on the list. Director Dan says, I've been playing a lot of Viticulture on Board Game Arena recently and wondered, now that the base game is contains mixed red and blue cards, will the Board Game Arena version be changed to reflect that new inclusivity? That's a great question, Dan. So far, the Board Game Arena version only has Viticulture, just the original Viticulture. The cards that, although no, you're right. The cards in the newest printings of Viticulture have, so I was going to say that it doesn't include any expansions. And so it doesn't include like the Viticulture World cards. But Dan, you touched upon something that is absolutely right, which is that the recent printings of Viticulture have a mix of red and blue cards so that you can end up with different types of couples emerging from the pairings at the beginning of the game. You're absolutely right about that. I hadn't thought about that. BGA is sometimes slow to adopt changes, but I'm glad you mentioned that, and I will definitely mention that to Board Game Arena and send them those files so that they can update them. I don't think it should be all that difficult of an update, especially since the code is already there. Awesome. Thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, I should have thought of that. George says, have I seen Star Wars Unlimited? Am I excited about it? I have ordered a starter pack for Star Wars Unlimited. I haven't played it yet, but I'm very curious about it. And yeah, I'm just excited to play. I love the Star Wars IP. I love a lot of different Star Wars games. And yeah, I'm curious to try it. I heard that any of you attend the pre-release this past weekend. And what did you think of Star Wars Unlimited if you played it there? Austin says it was exciting to see the box art for the first Expeditions expansion. So this is something we kind of slipped into the Champion newsletter and to the the Scythe and Expeditions monthly newsletter, which I link to in the newsletter update that I just sent out today. But I was kind of a little sneaky reveal of the box art. Austin says, so Austin has questions about it. Austin, I'll just leave the art as it is for now. That's the preview I'm giving of the Expeditions expansion as of right now, just the box art. And again, you can find that in the Scythe and Expeditions monthly newsletter and the Champion newsletter that I sent out yesterday. We will fairly soon be revealing a lot more information about the expansion, including the name of the expansion and details about it. Mark says, how much demand will you need to reprint some of the promo packs that are sold out for Ruling Realms? Will it be packaged the new way if it gets reprinted? Good question, Mark. Good questions. We are working on a reprint of those realms now. We figured with Ruling Realms Redux coming out this summer, we might as well have everything in stock. So it's possible between now and then other promo packs will go out of stock and we won't have time to catch up on them then. But I kind of picked out realms that are either almost out of stock or are out of stock to reprint in time for Ruling Realms Redux. They will have the original packaging though, not the new packaging. We have two graphic designers helping us out right now and they're very busy with other things. So it was honestly just easier to reprint them with the existing packs rather than having to redesign the packs for those existing realms. Jeremy says, have I seen the color alphabet color ADD used in the game Gnar? It's a colorblind iconography. He says, on the vision friendly topic, is the faded last resource milk on the Wormspan hatchling cards? Yeah, we do have this like fade effect on the Wormspan cards where the last resource falls out of the fade a little bit. It's there. I actually haven't had any problems when I'm actually playing the game. But I understand that that's my experience. That might be different for other people. The Gnar alphabet is interesting. I think it's intriguing. It doesn't seem to account for looking at the letters from different angles though, which I think is a little less an idea for playing a tabletop game. Like some people are going to be sitting across the table and looking at icons from different angles. So I think it's a good work in progress towards dual coding different things in games. Jaren says, we were curious, why were the order numbers removed from the front of the Wormspan box? Yeah, I talk about this in the FAQ, Jaren. So typically for first runs of games, we have individual numbering on the front of the box. We say this was copy, 19,225 out of 20,000. For Wormspan, we made 100,000 copies. And honestly, this is my call. I just thought it seemed to take away from the value of individual numbering, given that number of copies in the first printing, for someone to get, I don't know, copy 89,163. Like it seemed less special to me than getting copy a lower number from a smaller print run, just given the size of the Wormspan print run. So just, it seemed like it wouldn't have the impact that it had on previous games. However, we have heard feedback, including on the FAQ where people have asked that same question, and I've answered it there, that people kind of miss it. That's one of the reasons that they like the first printings of games. And so I think what we're doing in the future, I think it'll be rare that we'll make a first printing the size of Wormspan. 100,000 copies is extreme for any game. But if we do that in the future, at the very least, we will print the words first printing on it so people can know, hey, I have the first printing of the game. This is a special copy. And for all other games that are lower printings, 25,000, 20,000 units, that we will go back to the individual numbering. That was my mistake for leaving it off here. I didn't realize people were valuing it or would still value it at such a high production quantity. And honestly, you may not even have known. I've written about that, but you don't know from getting a copy of Wormspan that we made 100,000 copies of it. Hilda says that they're teaching their copy of Wormspan all over the place too. George says his friendly little game store uses Shopify for the web orders. And one thing they do is allow people to buy items. And if they don't meet the threshold for free shipping, they can add a dummy item to their cart. They'll put everything in their order on hold until they purchase enough to get free shipping at some point in the future, which at some point they add a different dummy item that creates orders. What do you think about that idea for Stonemaier Games? That's very clever, George. That sounds like a lot of coding, to figure that out. Yeah, that's interesting. I do appreciate how they're trying to serve their customers there. Yeah, it's an interesting idea. I think for Stonemaier Games, the free shipping threshold is pretty high. It's at like $125. If you're a champion, it should trigger at $100. It's not something that we openly advertise. It's kind of something that people can stumble upon if they want to. So I guess the way I think about it, we're not trying to push you to buy more stuff. If you happen to be buying a lot of stuff, we're happy to give you free shipping. It isn't good for our profit margin when we do that. I mean, because shipping isn't actually free. We're still paying for shipping. It's just that you aren't paying for it in those cases. So, I think I the reason we don't advertise is that I don't want people to feel like they need to buy more stuff just to get there. I want people to buy exactly the things that they want and no more. So for that reason, I don't think that will do any gamification of the free shipping system, but it is clever for your friendly little game store to do that. Oh, Julia, thank you, Julio. As always, I've forgotten to pin comments on the screen, and I'm glad you reminded me. I need to put that on my list, as usual. Here we go. Here's a question that I remembered to pin. Kat says, how often do you review your game idea notes? I have a long list in a web app of all the different game ideas for themes and mechanisms and various games that I have. Is it whenever you have a new idea that you want to match a theme or mechanism to, or is it a regular review so it can jog some creativity? See, it's a little bit of both. Every now and then I just look through the list to see what's there. Every now and then I have an idea and I search through the list to find other related ideas so I can put it in the right place on the list. And other times I use the list when I have a roadblock or a designer's block when I'm designing a game and I need something, some sort of inspiration to help me figure out how to solve the problem. So I have to look through the list then. Brasset says, I'm almost done with a digital version of the Star Wars, the deck building game, if you want to test it. I don't want to test it, but I would love to play it. Is this an official thing that you're working on with Star Wars, or is this for Board Game Arena? Yeah, what's the context for this digital version? Alvin says that they're brand new to the hobby. Welcome to the modern gaming hobby, Alvin. And he already wants to design. I've designed a few that I know were flops and have settled on a new game to move forward with. Do you recommend any software to help with physical designing, i.e. hex tiles? There's a couple of different types of software that people use for game design. I like to use InDesign for prototypes. InDesign is my preferred way to go to for prototypes, but I might be in the minority there. I don't know, but I find it's very helpful to use for prototypes. I would recommend for hex tiles specifically. Hex tiles are really hard to cut out. They're very time consuming to cut out. And you can actually get the same effect by staggering squares. So if I have one square here and then I stagger another square here, I'll turn that around there and there, you have the same level of adjacency as you have with hexes, and squares are a lot easier to cut out than hexes. Yeah. Oh, Garrett has a very kind Garrett. Thank you. He says, I just wanted to publicly thank you for being awesome for multitude of reasons. Thank you, Garrett. I really appreciate that. I think I know the context for that. I appreciate you saying that. Let's see. G Money says, are you backing Thunder Road Vendetta? It looks pretty awesome. You know, I haven't played Thunder Road yet. I know people are, or I've heard many people say that they really love Thunder Road. I need to play it. I have a big gaming weekend coming up in the near future, so I might get to play it there. And yeah, I'm very curious about this game. So currently I'm not backing it because I haven't played it, despite having opportunities to probably play it. But so I'd like to play it first. Josh says that the local game store that he works at has 16 copies of Wingspan reserved. That's awesome, Josh. Thank you all for doing that. I'm really excited about the retail release date coming up on March 29th. Just a few weeks away now. Okay, Brasshead clarifies the Star Wars deck building app is their own custom app website. I just wanted to play a high quality digital version with friends. Yeah, I don't know about that. As a publisher, I would not recommend doing that without the publisher's permission. Not just I wouldn't recommend it. I would greatly condemn that for you not doing that without doing that with publisher permission, even just with friends, because that link gets out there and suddenly it's not just for friends. I appreciate your passion for the game, but yeah, if you're going to use the files from a game to create a digital version of it, please get the publisher's permission to do so. Austin says he recently backed a board game called Flow on Kickstarter that features the art actually from, but the artist that did the art for Tapestry, Andrew Bosley. He says, how do you decide whether or not to back a game? That's a good question, Austin. There are a lot of factors that go into it for me. There are some like standard factors, like does the art look good? Does the graphic design look good? Does it look like a game that I'll enjoy playing? How are the reviews for the game, for the prototype of the game? What's the price for the game? The price does have an impact on me, especially when I'm buying something that I haven't had the opportunity to play. All those factor in, but also it also often comes down to it. partially a gut feeling and partially where I am as a gamer right then and there. Like, what games am I excited to play? Even though I won't play that game for many months because it won't be released for many months. What types of games do I feel like I have too many of right now? I talked about that a little bit with campaign games. A great campaign game could launch on Kickstarter tomorrow, but I still feel like I have so many coming from previous backings that I probably wouldn't back it. So things like that, all those factors go into my gut feeling for whether or not I'm going to back a game or not. Also, I'm seeing some great questions from you all. Let me ask you a question today that I've been thinking about. So I recently went through our Facebook groups, the Stillmar Games. We have a different Facebook group for each of our games. And I wanted to see, out of curiosity, in the spirit of inclusivity, which Dan mentioned earlier, Facebook tells me how many men and women are in that group, in that Facebook group for the game. And that's helpful information for me because it says, how welcoming are we being to a vast variety of people, a diverse array of people? I know that's just one type of diversity, but it is a type that Facebook is able to collect and share. And so I have all this data now that I kind of compiled for our breakdowns of games. It ranges from the female percentage, the percentage of women in these groups ranges from 9% at the low end all the way up to 45% at the high end. So pretty good range there. I'm curious I'm struggling as to how I can, if there is a blog topic there, is there a topic that can add value to other creators related to that information? And I don't know if there is. Maybe it's just information for me to have and digest and process. But I'm curious what you think. Is there a topic there related to that data that can be constructive and progressive and add value to other creators and the publishing community, the game publishing community as a whole? Let me know what you think. It's just, and maybe there isn't. That's fine too. I'm just something I'm processing right now. Actually, before I forget too, I'll go back to your questions in a second. My chocolate of the day, I think might be some ice cream. Might be some local ice cream, probably from Clementine's or Jenny's. We have some great little local ice cream places here in St. Louis. It's a warm, sunny day in here in St. Louis, so we might get a little ice cream treat today. What is your treat of the day, your indulgence of the day, or your chocolate of the day? Corey says, any games that you're looking forward to playing at Geekway this year? This is Corey, Josh, his buddy, and him. Already have our hotel and tickets. I'm looking forward to playing some games with all of you, Corey, at Geekway to the West this May. And anyone watching this who's curious, who wants to attend, who is open to attending a game convention, a very welcoming, flexible game convention where you just go and play games for a couple days with a wonderful array of a few thousand people. Go to Geekway to the West here in St. Louis. I'll be there. I would love to play a game with you. That's why I attend Geekway to the West. What am I excited to play? I have some games on my list I first have this gaming weekend coming up. So I might play some of the games at the gaming weekend that I would have otherwise played at Geekway. So I'm going to hold off until after that gaming weekend to start really assembling my list of games to play at Geekway. We'll see. So I mentioned InDesign as a prototype app earlier. Mark mentions something called Figma that I've heard a lot of people are using too. And it's free. That's great. Let's see. Mark says, there's a Kickstarter campaign going on right now. I appreciate, Mark, that you're not naming names, just bringing up a topic that will include an add-on of a Kickstarter version of a product that already went out into retail, which they said won't be on Kickstarter. Let's see. I'm assuming you'll... Okay, here's the continuation of the question. They are also offering exclusive cards for this Kickstarter version and mentioned about a promo pack for retail buyers that will be available later than the Kickstarter version distribution. Mark says, a few of those who have the retail version are not frustrated with the setup, and it would seem like the company is dismissive of discussing other options. What are your thoughts on this? Let me see if I can collect my thoughts on this. I mean, there are a few words here that you mentioned that I think create some tough situations. If, like you mentioned, exclusive here, company, I still don't understand why anyone would offer Kickstarter exclusives. Just offer a promo for free on Kickstarter and offer that promo for pay later on. It's a way to still value your backers up front. It's too late for them. Well, they could just undo that. They could just change that and say, hey, for this campaign, we're not doing exclusives. This will be a promo item for free now. Well, you can pay for it later. And also, there's this part that Mark says at the beginning that will include an add-on of a Kickstarter version of a product that already went out in retail. That's a tricky spot for Kickstarter additions. And I think it's just a matter of communication and clarity. I think it's okay to have products that you only sell on Kickstarter over multiple print runs, but you need to state that as such if you're a publisher. You got to say, this is a Kickstarter version that we're selling now, and if we do future Kickstarters, we might also sell reprints of this Kickstarter version on those Kickstarters. Opposed to the possibility that backers might be misled into thinking, oh, this is the only time to get this version on this specific Kickstarter campaign. So, Mark, I don't know what to do right now on this project. I can understand the frustration. It sounds like the public and a publisher being dismissive is typically problematic too. I can also understand, depending on the level of toxicity in the comments and how well-informed and fair those comments are, if the publisher is maybe not necessarily being dismissive, but not maybe answering the same thing over and over again. I can understand that too. So, yeah, that sounds like a tricky situation, and I don't have a solution for it other than don't do exclusives and clearly communicate things in the best way possible. Let's see. Olivier says, I was surprised to hear from Matago that the French version of Libertalia didn't sell well enough to get a second printing. How well is it performing for Stillmire? New printings, expansions? So we have on our, in fact, I can show you over here. I'm going to take down your comments so I can show you this on the other page here. On the progress chart, right up here is the Libertalia promo pack. So we have a Libertalia promo pack coming up quite soon. We put so much into the core game that we felt that there wasn't anything there to do an expansion for the game. But we do have a little promo pack that I will reveal the details of in the very near future. It is ready to go. It's at our fulfillment centers. I'm just waiting for the right time to actually sell it, along with a few other products that I want to sell at the same time. So they all ship together or can ship together. So it sold pretty well. We haven't done a reprint of it. I think we made enough in the first printing of Libertalia to cover us for a while, which is generally the goal. Ideally with the first printing, we would cover the launch period in the next like 5 to 6 months. We've gone a little bit beyond that with Libertalia. But overall, I'm pretty happy with how it went. What's important to me is that it brings joy to people. And based on what I've heard, people who have actually tried it seem to have fun with it, that's what's important for me. And it looks like Aramis had a similar question about Libertalia promo pack. Yeah, so I just answered that coincidentally right before that, your comment, Aramis. Julio says, I backed the Dog Park expansion and it should be coming in the next month. I believe you've played it. I played Dog Park. I had Dog Park on my shelf over here. Well, I played again with the expansion. For me, I still have a lot of plays to get out of Dog Park without the expansion. So I wasn't, as much as I love the idea of adding more dogs to the game, at the time the expansion was live, I didn't feel like the game was lacking more content. I felt like there was still a lot of content for me to discover in the game itself. So I didn't back the expansion, but I still have the game on my shelf. I still enjoy playing it. Yeah. Ian says he's teaching his wife viticulture this month. His showcase wall is expansions. Ian, so I love this idea. I've seen this on Instagram a little bit too. People who have a showcase wall, I know Ian does this, of games that they're just excited about that month. They want to see on their wall. They want to show to people that they want to get excited about themselves. I love that idea. We don't have a good wall for that here in my condo, but I love the idea. Chad says, have I played a choose your own adventure game? I have, yeah. I've played the books for sure. And I've played, let's see, I don't know, it depends on how you define it, but I played like Escape the Dark Castle is a little bit of a choose your own adventure game. House of Danger or War. I haven't played these specific games, House of Danger or War with Evil Power Master. I have played games, you can search for like narrative on my channel. I played some games with a lot of narrative. Yeah, I mean, I like the format. I don't know. And I've played the graphic novel adventures. Those are kind of in that same category. I enjoy the format. I often feel like when I have a book in front of me for that purpose, it serves a different purpose for me than a game, but that doesn't take away from the quality of it. It just feels a little bit different. James says, topic related to the data, musings on what makes a particularly Facebook group game more welcoming to both men and women. Perhaps you could survey some of the people in the group. I see where you're going there. Yeah, I probably need to take it a little bit further than that. Like what makes it more welcoming? Yeah, so I guess I'm starting with the framework that I want our games to be welcoming to a vast variety of people. So that's the goal. And then And then, yeah, you're right. Okay, this is good. Yeah, working backwards from there to see what makes these groups more welcoming to some people more than others. And yeah. Yes, yeah. I like that, James. Michael says, I'm not sure there's much to learn except to use gender neutral words in game manuals. Yeah, we do that. We use, yeah. I think there's more to it there, Michael, than just learning that. But I think that's a start for sure. Jan Williams says, yes, the group with 45% women is Wingspan. Wormspan was around 38%. I don't have all the data in front of me, but those were the top two. Apiary, I think, was around 25%. But I have all the data prepared for a blog post if I have a topic to actually discuss here. Ian kind of touches upon what was mentioned a few minutes ago by James. Yeah, what makes that? What makes certain games more welcoming than other ones? I think what I'm trying to avoid here is stereotyping. Like a stereotype would be that men like mechs and monsters and fighting, and so they gravitate towards Scythe and Expeditions, and women don't. And so that's a stereotype. I don't want to frame games using stereotypes. Also, if you say that, what does that mean? Does that mean to not design games with mechs and combat and monsters like an expedition? I'm not sure what the conclusion is there is what I'm struggling with a little bit too. Like, yeah, so that's where I'm struggling. Let's see, Corey says, a company's social media typically tends to skew more female. I like that it's typically got, I think it's because guys typically are too afraid to publicly like things. Interesting. Yeah, I haven't heard about that. I think at one point, someone told me that they had heard that fewer women subscribe to e-newsletters. I can't remember the reason they stated now, but I guess e-newsletters aren't necessarily social media, but it's similar. It's in the same realm of like Facebook groups, things that you subscribe to get content about. What was our last demographic survey? I won't try to pull up that data, but we do an annual demographic survey where we survey people who read our newsletter, and I'm always curious to see what we learn from the demographics there. Let me see if I can find that real quick. Here we go. Demographic survey 2023. Let's see what these results were showing. Only looks like 17% of respondents identified as female. 17% of our newsletter subscribers. So to me, that seems low. That seems like a low number, especially knowing that Wingspan has 45% of women comprise the Facebook group for Wingspan. Jan Williams says, when you do your playtest, do you purposely strive for 50-50 prefer men and women and compare the differences in results? Strive for 50-50, absolutely. Compare the differences in results. By gender, we don't. That's an interesting take. We haven't done that in the past. But I do strive for really a diversity across various spectrums, not just gender, in our playtesters. But that's a good note. Talking about like what can we act on from this information to make our games more welcoming to a variety of people. Mark mentions here as a little shout out towards my open letter to the internet last Thursday, which was about how we can each make a difference to make the internet a kinder, more welcoming, more loving place. I know we're all humans. We're going to make mistakes on the internet, just like we make mistakes in real life. But I think we each have the power to make the internet a better place. And I wrote a blog post about how we can do that, how we can kind of admit our own shortcomings and do better on the internet, which is something I try to do in the blog post and something that you might check out. That's the last Thursday's blog post. My blog post on Monday was about the quote, "Whoever wrote the rule." It's inspired by the book Setting the Table by Danny Meyer, who created the Shake Shack empire, the idea of questioning things by saying, whoever wrote the rule that and then challenging it and either learning from that and understanding why that rule is there, not rule, but why that tradition, that system is there, or making it better, trying to find a way to improve it. Zaktal says, with more than 1,500 games coming out every year, how do you keep up to date with games that try new things without them getting drowned out in the general noise? Part of it is that I try to play a lot of games. That's part of it. But you're right. I don't get close to playing 1,500 new games every year. I typically play probably around 100 new games every year. Or 200, not just 100. But I think the key, the really helpful key for me is that I follow a lot of gaming media, all different sizes of creators, big and small, different formats, podcasts, YouTube, blogs, Board Game Geek, so that I can learn what people are talking about and what these other games are about. So even if a game does not intrigue me, I might still watch a few videos on it or read some post about it so I can learn from how people are engaging with that game and learning what these other games are doing. So yeah, I consume a lot of content about games. Suzanne says, I think I missed something about Libertalia. I have the original, but when did it become the Winds of Galecrest? Are there differences in gameplay? Thanks for asking about this, Suzanne. Yeah, was it last year, 2 years ago? We released Libertalia Winds of Galecrest, which is a completely new edition of the original Libertalia. It uses the same core mechanism where you're simultaneously playing cards and then activating them in three different phases. But we reworked, and by we, I mean me and designer Paolo Mori, we reworked every single character for balance and clarity. We added 10 new characters. We added a new character that's always in play for two-player mode, so because we heard that two-player mode wasn't as good. We added a new tiebreaker. Instead of using numbers on cards, we have a reputation track. We added different meanings to the loot tokens. So the loot tokens don't always mean the same thing. They have different. They are defined by tiles and two different sides of the board. I'm missing some other things here, but that is the general gist of, and the components are completely refreshed. The art and components and design and graphic design are completely refreshed. So if you enjoy the original Libertalia, as I did, I enjoyed it so much that I decided to work on a second edition of it. Feel free to check out Winds of Galecrest. We are not the original publisher of the original version. It's the rights to that reverted to the designer, Paolo Mori, after a while. And once I learned that, I tried to pursue them and got the rights by working with Paolo. Alvin brings up a good conundrum related to what Zaktal said a few minutes ago. I've read as much as I can and listened to hours and hours of podcasts and books on game design. And one thing I noticed is that you have to go to conventions. I've been a nerd my whole life and I've never been able to go to any conventions and I won't let it stop me. But is it theoretically possible to design a successful game without being able to go to conventions? Absolutely. Alvin, yeah, Alvin says, I plan on playtesting as much as I can before pitching locally and via the internet. Yeah, I'm going to remove your questions so you see my face, but it's a great question. Somewhere Games is not a convention-driven company. I'm not a convention-driven person. I'm a pretty high introvert. I'm exhausted by conventions rather than energized by them. And they also aren't particularly productive, in my opinion. So I understand why people are saying that. I think you can see a lot in a short amount of time at a convention. You also can get valuable face-to-face time with someone so they can get a read on you. You can make a good impression on them. But I definitely don't think conventions are necessary for endearing yourself to publishers, to getting your game published, or to self-publishing a game. I definitely do not think they are necessary for that. Miles, my friend Miles, who had worked on Red Rising, also a fellow Brandon Sanderson fan, asked, am I backing the new secret Brandon Sanderson project? And I am. Yeah, I'm backing just for the digital, the secret book, whatever the secret book is, the digital version of the secret book. Yeah, I'm excited to see how that works out. Dan says, I think that so many online forums and groups are dominated by men, as cis men tend to be more vocal about opinions than women. The damage of a historically patriarchal society. Yeah, we're still working our way back from there. I think Dan has another comment here. How do you make safe spaces for women and non-binary? Yeah, so you're right. So it's not just about the game, but it's also about the space itself. Sorry. Safe space. Especially when it's male-led or male-dominated. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we try to make our spaces at Stonemaier Games safe for a vast variety of people. I want people to feel safe sharing their stories, their questions, their thoughts, their photos about our games in each of those game-specific groups. And I think that's you bring up a great point that it's particularly important to sometimes counteract the systemic issues with those types of groups. And yeah, it's a great point, Dan. Thank you for bringing that up. James also adds, maybe ask people in a particular group what drew them to the Facebook group or game. Don't use the word welcoming. What drew them? What drew you to game or group? Yeah, and I really like, I didn't even think about this, but I'm so glad that you all are mentioning the difference between the game and the group. Both are factors here, the game itself and the group, but both are valid too. I need to look at both of them. Rocky says, social stats aren't a direct correlation to your full player base. That's true, but I get how to use it as a proxy in the absence of other data points, but just keep that in mind. You're right, Rocky. Yeah, there are, it's just one data point. Someone belonging to, like, us having 10% of the people in the side of the Facebook group are female. That doesn't mean that only 10% of people who actively play side are female. That number could be lower, could be higher. I don't know. That's just the people who are opting into that particular group. And you're right that we should keep that in mind. Valerie says that Wingspan and Wormspan are definitely higher in the female demographic where I am. And yeah, they are the definitely the top two in the Facebook group as well. Julia says, a while ago, you were requesting ideas for April Fools. Have you decided what you're going to do? You don't have to reveal it. Of course, I did decide what I'm going to do. I'll tell you what I didn't decide to do because I actually want to do not a legitimate video, but a non-silly video about it. But one of the ideas came up to talk about my favorite games that either seem edible or feature food in the game. So food-related games that make me hungry, basically. So I want to do a real video about that because there are, there are a lot of games to discuss in that category. So I didn't choose that, and that might give you a hint as to what I actually did choose. The video will go live one day before April Fool's because I do Sunday videos. Sunday is March 31st, but it'll be live on April 1st as well. Thanks, Daniel. Daniel says, I continue to be impressed by your games from a solo perspective. Wormspan is amazing. I have yet to play your own Tapestry for solo. Would you recommend the base game only or with any particular expansions? There's a lot of game in just the core game for Tapestry. So I would say starting out with any of our games, just start with a core game and see if you enjoy it. It may not be for you, but I personally obviously really love Tapestry and I've heard good things about the solo version. I handle the multiplayer version. So I would recommend just starting with the base game and seeing if it's a game that you want to go deeper into after playing through the 16 different civilizations, five or 10 different capital city maps in the core game. There's a lot in that four box for you to play through. George says, maybe you should reframe your question as, what about a game turns men or women off? Perhaps there are factors that are driving people away from the game rather than drawing them to it. So yeah, that's a good point. Drew you to or away. I like that, George. Luke points out it can be challenging to join Facebook groups. I was part of a Doctor Who communities online, but there was a lot of racism and misogyny, and it ruined Doctor Who for me. Yeah, Luke, I'm sorry you experienced that. And that is something that we take incredibly seriously in our Facebook groups. We really try to, I mentioned the term safe space earlier. Dan mentioned that. I think it's more than that. I think it's more than just safe. It's creating an atmosphere in a group where the people who choose to participate in it and the way that people choose to participate in that group is actively welcoming and engaging, which I guess is also safe. But yeah, I keep coming back to the word welcoming, that I think it is possible to foster that sort of space. And that's another topic I've been thinking about lately or related to this. How can publishers reduce toxicity? And this is something that we think about a lot at Somar Games, but I'm curious what you think. What are things that you've seen publishers do that make those types of groups or Kickstarter threads, forums, communities, that publishers have control over or moderators have control over? What can they do to make those spaces more less toxic and more welcoming? I think that's tied to all this, less toxic, more welcoming. Frank, So Alvin, your comment, your question was about game conventions, and Frank West, who is an amazing publisher, runs the City of Games, publishes the Isle of Cats and some other amazing games. He says he had never attended conventions until after his first game was launched. Although they can help, you can absolutely do it without conventions. I agree with you 100% there, Frank. The Duke of Fall says, how do you determine when it's appropriate to release an expansion for a board game? It seems like expansions are almost expected these days. It is interesting to see that. I personally find myself, I mostly just want the core game. It's very rare that I get really, really excited about an expansion, even for a game that I love, which is odd to me. I don't even understand that part of myself. But we typically, after a game is released, we listen to what people say about it a lot, especially players, not necessarily reviewers, people, just people who are playing the game. And we try to get a feel for whether or not they're looking for more stuff, if they want more stuff, or if they're just happy with all the stuff that we packed into the core game. And so we get a read on it that way and then determine if we want to take another step forward with an expansion. That's typically our method. Rocky points out something. Yeah, I was mentioning this, Rocky. Maybe there's also something inherently wrong about thinking gender or SOGI. I'm not familiar with that acronym, but I'll look it up. Informs whether or not someone will be interested in a particular game or not. And I must admit I'm a little uncomfortable doing that too, Rocky. Yeah, assuming that like what I said about mechs and warfare and monsters and silent expeditions. Rocky says, I feel good games are just good games and find their audience regardless of gender. Maybe you don't need to set some sort of diversity goal. I don't know about that last part. I think it's worth setting a diversity goal and worth trying to find more ways to actively include and welcome people into the Stonemaier Games community, at least. I can't speak for other publishers, but I think that is a worthy goal. I think how we look at the data and how we accomplish that goal is up for debate. That's the process that we're constantly learning and trying to improve it on. But I think it is a worthy goal. Hilda says, when it comes to Facebook groups, I tend to stay away from most of them. Too often, I've seen someone post a comment or ask a question, and the responses are bombarded by jokes at the poster, passive-aggressive comments, etc. I haven't seen this in Stonemaier groups. It does happen from time to time, but we moderate them, which is why I happily stay in those. But in other groups, I've quickly left over toxic environments. I may still love a product or a topic, but I won't stay in a toxic environment. And I am glad that you don't, Hilda. I don't think anyone, I think we all deserve better than that. You should not stay in a, or at least I should not stay in a toxic environment. And so I'm glad that we've been able to accomplish that so far for Stonemaier Games, but I want to be even more welcoming. And I understand how in general, maybe someone's past experience with other Facebook groups or online communities may make them less likely to join a new one. And there isn't a lot that we can do about that, but maybe there is some way that we can demonstrate before someone even joins a group that this group will be welcoming to you. Yeah, that's an interesting question. How to demonstrate to someone who hasn't already joined and has a negative past experience that our groups are different, or at least trying to be different. Jan Williams says, are there any industry-wide statistics on what the split is between men and women playing board games? I think I have seen some studies about this, but I don't have them handy. I may have to do some Googling to figure that out. Trevor says, maybe instead of a safe space, you can say protected space, where you actively remove toxic elements. This is something I'm curious about as well with design days. I have about 10 to 20% women on my email list or Discord, but engagement with the group is more than 95% men, so it's super tough. I hear that, Trevor. Protected is another word, protected. And I still like the word welcoming, too. I'll continue to use that one. I know it doesn't apply universally, but I think it's a good word. Ian's used the word acceptance. Acceptance is what he looks for in a group. Accepting other people's views can be difficult, but it's a must for everyone to enjoy the group. Yeah, being open to other people's opinions, especially opinions expressed as such, I think is an important part of the way that we talk to each other in general. Yeah. I like that word, acceptance. I'll make a note of that. Before I get too far, we're almost done here, but some games that I played recently. I played Dune Imperium again before going to watch Dune Part 2 in the theaters, and it was like one of the closest games of Dune Imperium I've ever played. Four-player game, three of us ended up with 10 points, and I won with a spice tiebreaker. I've also played some digital roguelikes recently. That was one of the topics for today's video, including Into the Breach, Forward Escape the Fold, and Roguebook are some that I tried recently in kind of studying for a video that I filmed yesterday. Also played the trick-taking game called Inflation, where you overlap new numbers on top of one another, cards on top of one another, to form an increasingly large number throughout a hand of cards. Also in today's kind of title, I mentioned top 10s, which I was referring to the roguelike top 10s and the top 10 games of all time video that I filmed or posted this past Sunday. And I mentioned Survivor, one of my favorite competitive reality shows, started up again. Season 46 started last week. At least the U.S. version of Survivor started last week. And I love the opening episode. It actually has some really cool gamification elements in it, including a little puzzle between three players. It actually has a puzzle and then a card game played by three players, a little bluffing game that three players had to play. So great. If you love games and you haven't ever tried Survivor, try season 46. And maybe it's a good place to start. I love the show, and I'm sure I'll mention it again in future videos. We're also trying the show Deal or No Deal Island, which it was completely off my radar. But then I saw that Boston Rob, who is famous for participating in six seasons of Survivor, he is on Deal or No Deal Island. And so we're giving that a try. And honestly, we're kind of enjoying it so far. It has a little bit of Survivor in it. Has some gamification, some forms of like alliances that can form. And it also has a deal or no deal game at the end of each episode where you don't win money in that game. Instead, the money that is earned in that game goes into the total pool to potentially be won in one final deal or no deal game at the end of the season. So that's a clever hook, and it means that there's going to be a ton of money up for grabs by the end of the season of the deal or no deal. Yeah. Chet says, did you get the chance to watch Avatar The Last Airbender on Netflix yet? Not the live-action version. No, we haven't watched that one yet. In fact, we were going to give it a try at lunch the other day, but then I saw that the premiere is an hour. Are all the episodes an hour, or is it just the premiere? Our lunchtime shows are typically around 20 to 30 minutes. Azuriel says, the most difficult part of trying to manage a community away from toxicity is the fact that the closer you get to your goal, the more enticing you make it for trolls and bad actors to target you. That is the sad state of the internet, isn't it? Yeah, that is extremely well said, and I wish there was a good answer for that. But I think unfortunately you're true and you're right. I think one of the nice things is that is moderation. I think on communities like Facebook groups. Like the comments on YouTube, the comments on the Stonemaier Games blog, I have control over who can comment there. And it's a responsibility that I take very seriously because I want people to feel comfortable challenging me. And I want to make sure that even on my tough days, that I am open to those comments staying there and making a difference. But there is a difference between a constructive comment, even a negative comment, someone saying they don't like something that we're doing, and a comment that is hateful, or that is a bad actor, a troll. Not that I want to dismiss someone as a troll, but there are certain comments where someone is just trying to make the world burn, and those are the comments that don't belong. And we have moderation guidelines listed in the comments on our website. So it's nice to have that level of control, and it's a responsibility I take very seriously. What else is going on? Zoftal says, why are we drawn to themes is something that has to do with socialization and the environment we grew up in. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, not about our gender. It's about our background, our interest, how much we have been allowed based on the groups that we've grown up with to embrace different versions of nerddom and geekdom. For sure. The best practice is to consistently communicate and foster the kind of community that can that engenders the qualities you want in which it becomes self-maintaining. And that's a lot. We've seen that from a lot of the Stonemaier Games communities. even though we do moderate, a lot of it is just self-perpetuating, a self-perpetuating level of welcoming and kindness. And there are exceptions to that, but then we moderate them. But yeah, for the most part, they're community driven, and that makes a huge difference. Dan says, a new play in London is having nights for only Black audiences in order to create safe spaces. Is there a trial of female-only groups for your games worth a try, led by a female staff member? So it could be Christine, Susanna, Erica. That's interesting. That is a big topic there, Dan. And I don't know if I'm well-informed enough or eloquent enough to comment on the idea of using exclusion as a form of welcoming. I think that is a very tricky area to explore. I'm glad you brought it up. Definitely some good food for thought there. Rocky says, can definitely aim to be welcoming or make sure you don't have barriers for people to get into your game. So maybe that's an area to explore. But yeah, there's more than just male-female binary. So full diversity would recognize the full spectrum of gender identity, which is a lot. Beautifully said there, Rocky. Yeah, that diversity... diversity goes beyond, well beyond, gender identity. It is, unfortunately, just the only type. I guess Facebook might also mention age. So age diversity is also important. James says, I think it's important to have a code of ethics that is written down and people are asked to sign off on it. We do have that on Facebook. Yeah, so all of our Facebook groups have guidelines that have essentially a code of ethics. We also have that for our commenting guidelines on our website. I think I might have it on YouTube somewhere too, but you might have to seek it out to see it. see a few comments here about Survivor. Nate says, so I'm also watching the U.S. season 2 of The Traitors, and Nate says the last 2 episodes of The Traitors have been so juicy. I was sad to see. Oh, spoiler there, Nate. People might not be caught up. Sorry. But yeah, I am really enjoying The Traitors. I think it's been a really fun season to watch. I have not watched the other. I think there's maybe a UK one that I haven't watched and another one that I haven't watched, but I'm loving the show. Yeah. Yeah, Martin says, I like the words accepting and welcoming as it feels it's about the group and puts the burden to be welcoming on the group's members. I agree. I wouldn't exactly use the word burden, but I would say the responsibility, the accountability, it's not just about the moderators. It's about the people in the groups themselves. Safe space feels more as if there's a victim. Yeah, I can kind of see that, but I still believe in safe spaces. But yeah, I agree that the best... most welcoming groups are those where it is self-perpetuating by the members in the group itself. Yeah. I'll make a note of that. Self-perpetuating by the members. Yeah. Jan Williams says, can I just say that your positivity and eagerness to share learnings is something that draws me to some of our games, and I am proud to be a Stonemaier ambassador. Thank you, Jan Williams. I appreciate you saying that. And something that it's a goal that I don't always accomplish, but it's a goal that I always strive for. And I appreciate you giving me and us a chance to Stonemaier Games. Games Overboard says, any thoughts on putting googly eyes in the store for April Fool's Days? They really enhance the box art. That is a fun little twist to do. We do our kind of version of that is the cat ears. So for April Fool's, and I'll put a little note to remind Dave to do this. We changed the Stonemaier logo to have little cat ears on it. We have a Stonemaier Games April Fool's shirt that has the cat ears on it. I think that's still on the web store too. That's our version of the googly eyes, little cat ears. Well, I think that, I didn't even complete the new newsletter. Is there anything else I need to cover? It was a very low-key newsletter, mostly just focused on Wormspan, as we want to keep the spotlight on this game that we spent so much time creating. And so that's the main thing. We also mentioned some of these other newsletters that you can subscribe to if you want updates every month or so about specific games. So it's, I guess, a little similar to these Facebook groups, but it is not a community exactly. It's just us sharing some fun information with you. And yeah, nothing else really big this month, just general newsletter stuff. But thank you all for hanging out with me for the last hour. I really appreciate it. I love hearing your thoughts on these discussion topics, even if sometimes they're tough discussion topics and sometimes it involves a healthy challenge from you to me. I really appreciate that. Yeah, have a great Wednesday. I look forward to seeing what you play this over the next week, and I'll see you again hopefully next Wednesday. Take care. Bye.